Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Enough! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with Professor John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. You guys have questions for John, you can text them into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
That game last night was really awful. I was telling Jim that I thought, yeah, the Cardinals, they put up 38 points. I didn't think they looked particularly great. I thought they were good. They were fine. But it was more about how just out of sorts and uninspired the Cowboys seem to be.
Yeah, in fact, I don't know if you've been seeing the NFL Network apparently has been talking to some of the players anonymously, and now they're taking big-time shots at the coaching staff, saying that the coaches aren't teaching, they're not motivating, they're not doing a good job communicating. I mean, they're taking major shots at Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, all those different things. It's like saying that this coaching staff is not prepared, which, of course, that stuns me because I've known Mike McCarthy for the longest time, but something is really wrong with this team.
Yeah, John, do they look like they quit at all to you?
I think so. I mean, to me, they look like they quit. I mean, that's a bad sign because, I mean, you've got a first-year coach only six games into his career right now in Dallas, and it's not going well, and it's not like they can fire him or anything of that nature. He's got, what, 5 years, $45 million on his contract, but this is a disaster. I mean, they look and play like one of the worst teams in football. You saw it in the Seattle game. I mean, Prescott was able to, get the team and put him on his shoulder and try to get back, but overall, this is a disaster.
Well, was it more about the offensive line and the injuries that they're having there, John, or was something wrong with Andy Dalton because he looked really off?
Well, I think he's not going to have a chance to do much because of how bad it is with the offensive line. I think that is a problem. But no, he did not do well. There's no question about it.
Man, oh man. Well, what was your takeaway from the Cardinals? Because we were kind of looking at them, scouting them. They're the next opponent for the Seahawks, and it was hard to tell. All right, as I was telling Jim, I didn't think they played brilliant football. It was more about the Cowboys, but they certainly have. Buda Baker was a one-man wrecking crew, and Kenyon Drake played really well. Kyler Murray didn't throw the ball particularly well, but I mean, what's your takeaway on that team?
Well, I mean, I think it's still going through some growing pains, and even though it's the second year for Cliff Kingsbury, he's still trying to identify the personality of that offense. And what's amazing is when you think, I mean, here's a pure guy coming out of an air raid offense in college, and he gets to the pros, and he starts out doing four receiver sets. Then the next thing you know, he's morphing into a two tight end type of offense, and then the tight ends have had problems, and so they have switched to more three receiver set, and now it's turning more into a running team, which, of course, I'm sure Mike Leach is just shaking his head saying, we got a running team on a run and shoot or on a an air raid type of team. I mean, so it's kind of baffling. And you can see it's been up and down right now with Kyler Murray. I mean, either one, he's not getting the ball downfield as much. He's been inaccurate at different times. He's been, sacked pretty much the same amount of times as Russell Wilson. He gets about, three sacks, although it's cut down a little bit. It was three. He had 48 sacks last year in the 16 games. And then this year he's down to 9. But, they're just not in sync on offense. And that's amazing because, I mean, yesterday they get 3 passes for 22 yards to Larry Fitzgerald. That's not good.
Well, Buda Baker was sensational last night, John. Boy, really you just see what he was doing out there. Do you remember back in 2017 when the Seahawks took Malik McDowell with the 35th pick and then the Arizona followed up with Buda Baker, number 36 overall? Do you remember there being a bunch of hubbub back then? Because right now it's sure easy to go back and think, man, why didn't they just take the hometown kid?
Yeah, well, that sometimes happens. But again, I think that the plan was that they wanted to get the defensive tackle because, John Snyder traded down and, say what you want. Obviously, McDowell was a disaster because he never played a down for this team. But out of it, they get 4 trades and they get 2 starters and the trade downs. I mean, they were able to get Shaquille Griffin in with the extra draft picks that they got trading down. They were able to get Chris Carson. They did take Mike Tyson, who they thought could maybe do something as a 6th round pick at safety. That didn't work out. And then they got Leno Hill. Tedrick Thompson, not Leno Hill, but they got Tedrick Thompson, and they got some starts out of him. So even though this didn't work out, they still came out with 2 Pro Bowl caliber players, which is pretty good.
Where does Baker rank, John, on the list of best safeties in the NFL?
I'd say right now you have to put him in the top three or four. I mean, because, you know, I still contend that Jamal Adams is number one. I think Harrison Smith is number two. And, you know, I know Anthony Harris just got the franchise contract with the Minnesota Vikings, but I think you have to put Buda Baker number three. Now, you know, I'm scratching a couple because maybe, you know, Mika Fitzpatrick out of Pittsburgh can be right up there. You know, Derwin James, you can't count him. He would be up there too, but he's injured right now and is out for the season. So, you know, that I think would be the beginnings of the top five safeties right now in football, but I think he's clearly in the top three.
John, we were talking about something that Jim had written for 710sports.com, his latest piece, and he had some guys he identified as underpaid, some guys he identified as overpaid. Where are you at with B.J. Finney? I've almost forgot about him until Jim brought him up, and you're mm-hmm. like, yeah, this is a guy they made an investment in, an $8 million contract over 2 years, $4.5 million guaranteed, and he's got zero snaps this season.
Well, no, he's had some, I mean, zero snaps on offense. He gets three snaps on special teams. So.
Oh, well, and it's worth it. Jim's way off.
Yeah, I mean, you get three good snaps on special teams. I mean, clearly it just hasn't worked out yet. And that's going to happen. I mean, they came out big time, I think, on two what they had, because I think that Brandon Shell has been a major upgrade compared to Jermaine Ifedi, and certainly Damian Lewis has to be one of the best offensive line rookies in football. Mm-hmm. So they came out well there, and they came out well with Ethan Posick. And again, I still go to the stats and the analytics where, you know, they may not get the good reviews in Pro Football Focus, but I know that ESPN, their analytics team, has said this offensive line, I haven't seen this week's numbers, but at least in the first 5 weeks, of course, I guess you can't change because they didn't play because of the bye week, is one of the top five right now with a success rate blocking and passing situations. They're winning their battles.
No, I think they've been great. You know me, John. I was the resident critic of the offensive line for years. I think they've been outstanding. Is Finney a guy you think, Jim brought up that we had interviewed somebody from Pittsburgh who talked about, yeah, he's probably better suited to be a guard than he is a center. Is it maybe an Ethan Posick, Justin Britt situation where, you know, guys were in positions where they just didn't excel, didn't really grasp what that spot meant, and then they just found their niche at another spot? Do you think he could be better served playing guard?
I mean, when you look at, because I know just when you talk to Pittsburgh, I mean, he was fine at center and he's fine at guard. And he came off and he played both positions when needed. You know, when Marquise Pouncey was hurt, he came out and played center and did a good job there for Pittsburgh. And when needed at guard, he did a good job with Raymond Foster being hurt. So, no, I think that he's good in that regard. But so far, and maybe it's still a matter of adjusting to a Mike Solari-type system that could be slowing him down. But it certainly hasn't been a good start. And, again, fortunately, this team's covered so far. Well, I mean, because you can see it's like, okay, here's B.J. Finney. You know, here's Mike Iupati, who's not going to play 16 games, obviously. But Jordan Simmons has moved ahead of him.
John, the other game yesterday, Kansas City beating Buffalo. They came back from losing to the Raiders. Buffalo's now lost two games in a row. What were your takeaways from that game?
The takeaway is that we find out that in the last week that they're not a Super Bowl team. I mean, they're not a Super Bowl contender. They still might be the best team in the AFC East, but they lost to two better teams. Tennessee outplay them and look better. I mean, Kansas City's the best team in the AFC, and so I think what it just you look at is like, okay, Buffalo, just try to win the division and beat out the New England Patriots. I still think that they have a chance to be a 10-win team, but you know what they can't do is they can't have the turnovers. That seems to be a mistake. That's not good. And you know, Josh Allen is he's good, but he's not great. But still, I think that what you're looking at is instead of them being a top three seed, they're probably more of a top five seed, but still that they'll make the playoffs and I think they'll win the division.
If you guys have questions for John Clayton, you can text those into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll get to your questions here in a moment. Back to Jamal Adams for a moment. We played the clip of Pete Carroll talking about him yesterday. We didn't walk away from that clip feeling really confident that he was going to play this week. What's your sense?
Still too early to tell. I mean, it didn't sound encouraging, but like anything else, I mean, you've heard Pete on Mondays, you know, say something similar, and the next thing that you know, they get to the Wednesday walkthrough, and all of a sudden things look good because, you know, it was certainly uncertain before the bye week, you know, in Quentin Dunbar. Then he comes in and does well on the Wednesday walkthrough and then goes on the practice field Thursday. So he's going to be able to go. But, I mean, the one thing I think that you're going to see in this case, you know, maybe more so than any injured player on this team, Jamal Adams is going to campaign to be able to play this game because you don't want to risk any further injury. These five games with four against the division teams are the most important part of the season, and you want to have if you can't have them for all five, you definitely need them for four, and particularly you know these running teams because now Arizona's become a running team at 161 yards a game. I mean, Jamal Adams could be huge, and maybe what it comes down to is that you have to maybe spell him a little bit. In other words, don't have him out there for the 60, 65 plays. You know, mix it up a little bit with Ryan Neal and you know. Demarius Russell, Demarius Randall, and all that stuff. So I still think that you know they don't have to rush anything, but because they're still in pretty good shape.
John, 710sports.com. You have a post today talking about the Seahawks, the tough five-game stretch they have coming up. It looks like it's going to be a challenge for the run defense.
Yeah, it really will be. But I think that you know, right now, I think you have to say that the run defense has been stronger than the pass defense. But it's interesting when you start to break the season in thirds because in the first five, you know, even though you know they had Minnesota Vikings had a good day running the football, that's still you figure that Kirk Cousins is more the passing quarterback, and so that was a little bit of a letdown. But for the first four, they did very well. And I think that you can see in the five games, and they've taken on good running backs. I mean, Dalvin Cook, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, and they're giving up 3.9 yards a carry and just a little over 100 yards a game. And so now what's the key to this is for the next five games against teams that can run the football. I mean, you know, you got the running of Kyler Murray and also Kenyon Drake, who'd had 160 plus yards yesterday and last night, and then you got the creative running schemes of Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. So that's going to be the challenge, but if they can stop the run, and that's why your favorite guy, Damon Harrison, Snacks, mm-hmm. could be an important guy to get in there and start getting in the mix.
John, the 206 says, please ask the professor what Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap's trade value is. They're reportedly unhappy with reduced roles in Cincinnati.
Right now, I mean, that's not a thing that the Bengals like to do. They're not a big trade team. So, you know, it's one where, one, I don't know if they can fit into the Seahawks cap. That's going to be a big issue. And secondly, the Bengals, if they don't trade, you can't get them.
Hmm. John, what do you think about Tua? The Dolphins have announced that he's going to be the starter in the next game. They have a bye week coming up, but they face the Chargers on November 1st.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised just because you know my thought was going to be more November, but I guess in the thought of Brian Flores, he wanted to do this at a time that they have a bye week. Well, originally, I think the bye week was going to be week 12, but then because of all the changes in the schedule and that, they moved it up to week 7, and so now he gets in there, and it's going to be interesting to see because here they are 3-3. You know, cause they got some breaks because they were able to beat San Francisco and had, you know, the chance to play the Jets, which, of course, is an automatic win. And so now, you know, he goes in there and we'll see how he can do with, you know, an offensive line. What I worry about is the fact that he's a lefty and what's the shift in the line, you know, because, you know, Austin Jackson was doing pretty well at left tackle and you always want to protect the blind side of the quarterback, but now he's on injured reserve. But the right tackle, Jesse Davis, is like the weakest guy on their team as far as blocking, and he's like the only guy back from last year as a returning starter on the offensive line. So that could be an issue. And again, I mean, we don't get to see this much anymore. I mean, you know, Ken Stabler's no longer in football, but how many left-handed quarterbacks do we get to see?
Cam and Cooper over in Pullman this year, John.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. By the way, speaking of Washington State quarterbacks, did you see the comments today made by Doug Marrone?
Yeah, I didn't like him at all, John.
What'd he say?
He basically said that he's not opposed to maybe benching Gardner Minshew. He says that could be on the table. And so Gardner, of course, again, as I said at the very beginning, that this is a very bad Jacksonville team, and I think that Gardner can do well, but it's not going to translate into wins. I know that didn't look good in the first game where they were able to beat the Indianapolis Colts, but now they've come back. They've lost five in a row. They had the NFL history made when they came back and were able to get the wins against, they lost three games to winless teams. That's an NFL record. Their defense can't stop anybody. It's not good.
Yeah, Professor, it's not good.
Not good.
Yeah, they'll get back on track against the Chargers this week. We'll see. Hopefully, it'll work out. Getting back to Miami.
What track are they on? Because again, it's like they're not good. It's like you can get on the track, but it's like they won one game and they've lost five.
I know, Professor, but I just still want to, you know, participate in Minshew Mania, if it's okay with you.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Now, if I'm Ryan Fitzpatrick, I get it, I guess. I know that I'm just kind of holding the spot for Tua, but I just beat San Francisco on the road. I just beat the Jets 24-0. How do you think he's feeling about things?
Surprisingly, he's okay. Because I think that, I know at different times when he has been benched, he's not liked it, and naturally so. He's a proud guy. He's a Harvard grad. He's a real smart player, and he's proud. But also, I think he realizes that it's like, hey, I'm just holding the fort right now for Tua, and he's been very supportive of Tua. So in this case, he was fine on it. In fact, I think, I don't know how he did it, but he actually almost applauded the move just to give Tua the chance to get out there.
Hey, one other Bengal that people are familiar with that wants a trade from that team would be John Ross, mm-hmm. who, I mean, obviously a burner. The guy can do great things. He just can't stay healthy. What's the value for him? What's the market look like for him?
You'd have to think it's going to be a little. I mean, if they are going to make a trade, there was probably going to be more him than anything else because they phased him out at totally. I mean, because he's an inactive player right now, and so my guess would be because it's a first round contract, the best they're going to do is get a sixth round pick, and so some of the teams that are wide receiver thin. I mean, could that be the New York Jets? Could that be the San Francisco 49ers? I mean, teams that are looking for wide receivers, I think, got us to consider him. Maybe even the Las Vegas Raiders. That could be a consideration. I think that he'd like to get out to the West Coast. And you remember the story in training camp where he left the team with permission to go visit L.A. or in California where his wife was and his I think one of his kids, and they come back and they had the problem with the they had the COVIDs, and so they had to go take care of that.
John, what about David Irving? He signed with the Raiders. Should the Seahawks have signed him?
No, I don't think so. I mean, again, he's had a bad history as far as, personal things off the field. And, it's like, okay, do you want to take the chance? No, I'd say I think they're fine in not signing him.
Hey, what somebody's asking, 425, asking any word on Daryl Taylor and when he's going to be ready to play. I read a thing to Jim this morning that said, yeah, they haven't done any change of direction running yet. It's just straight line running, which doesn't sound very hopeful to me. Is there a chance we don't see him at all this year?
There's a chance, sure. But I think that Pete says he's making progress. It's just slow progress. And he fell behind because of the pandemic, because he wasn't, I guess, able to get the proper training and all those different things. And so he's behind. I'm thinking it's probably going to be more November. It's certainly not going to be October. But I wouldn't write off the season yet.
Professor, I thought Arizona, they lost Chandler Jones, right? A biceps injury? Yeah. Okay, and so it was supposed to affect their pass rush, and yet, John, they looked pretty good last night rushing to Andy Dalton. They've got 17 sacks on the year. How are they getting it done?
Well, I mean, again, 17, what did they have, like three or four last night? I think part of the issue was that, they were behind. The Cowboys were behind so much, but now they couldn't do anything on the running game, and so everything was going to be pass. And so, when you go out and you throw 57 passes, I mean, there's a good chance you're going to get sacked, particularly, in situations where you got the Cardinals running the football. That's kind of like the ideal thing. So, they got some yesterday, but again, everybody seems to be, getting some pass rush. And, you look at the Cowboys' offensive line, and they're down four starters, and so they're very vulnerable. Because then, as the game went on, Zach Martin got a concussion, and so he couldn't finish the game. So basically, you're down to Connor McGovern or something like that, and that was all you had on the offensive line from the start of the season.
John, the 971 says, John, for the Chiefs and the way Edwards ran the ball last night, do you see Le'Veon Bell becoming a player who gets a lot of time?
None. I didn't think he was going to get a lot of time even before this because, again, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is, I think, the best back that Andy Reid has ever had. And he's proving it because he's getting Andy Reid to do things that he doesn't like to do necessarily, run the football. And that's what, because I still remember at different times going to Philadelphia, seeing Andy, and if he had a game where they had a back at 20 carries, I'd go to Andy after the game and says, Andy, are you okay? Are you sick? What's going on? Because you're not used to running the ball. I mean, you'd rather throw the screen pass or, you know, a little shovel pass or anything like that to the running back. But no, I think that, you know, they just got him as an insurance policy. It's kind of like last year when they brought LeSean McCoy in. And, you know, LeSean McCoy's borderline, you know, consideration for the Hall of Fame because of his yards and all those different things. And, you know, that was he and Brian Westbrook were the two best backs Andy had before he got Hilaire. But I honestly, I look at the Le'Veon Bell situation, and my read on it is, hey, he's going to make $8.5 million mostly from what's being paid by the New York Jets. It's like, okay, I got a chance to maybe get a couple Super Bowl, a playoff check, maybe a Super Bowl check. I'm just not going to work real hard, and I'll just fit in if they want me to fit in.
Professor, you know, I confess that in the morning I get up and I watch ESPN and I see Mike Greenberg's show get up, and then I see Stephen A. Smith laughing about the Cowboys. It sure seems like Baker Mayfield. Boy, you know, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Cleveland score 49 points at Dallas? And now they're just, it seems like these guys are all trashing on him and they're done with Baker Mayfield. Where are you on Mayfield?
I mean, I think he's just average. I think that's what you can see. And I think what it comes down to is a certain type of game has to work his way. And he's like, you know, so many mid-level type quarterbacks, is that you're as good as the talent around you. And because, again, I mean, you can see, and this would be like an Andy Dalton. I mean, this would be a Mark Sanchez. I mean, if you have, you can win if you've got good receivers, a good running game, and a good offensive line, but you're dependent on what's around you. And so I just look at it that way.
Professor, it's still early in the week, but the 206 wants to know who wins between the two unbeatens, Pittsburgh and Tennessee.
I think Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, because what's going to be interesting to see is that, you know, you've got the league's leading rusher in Derrick Henry. You also got Ryan Tannehill, who's like now one of the hottest quarterbacks in the league. In his 15 starts, he's thrown for almost 4,000 yards. He's completing 69.6% of his games or his passes, and he has 35 touchdown passes, and he's also had amazing ability to come back because he's had 5 fourth quarter comebacks in his 15 games as a starter and 2 more where he had game winning drives. But I just look at Pittsburgh, and it's going to hurt not having Devin Bush, but I still think with the blitzes and what Keith Butler does with that defense, and you have Ben Roethlisberger, advantage Pittsburgh.
John, good stuff. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light and Made to Chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, as we told you, we do have a short show today because we've got Game 1 of the World Series coming up just a little bit after the top of the hour, but we couldn't miss out on El Hombre. Michael Bradley joins us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
It is that time, sort of. Usually it's at 5 o'clock, but during football season we get bumped all around with this segment. But he's pliable, this man.
Pliable.
He is. He's very agreeable, this man. He is the one, the only El Hombre. Michael Bradley, how are you, man? Is that sounds like something I heard coming out of that Cowboys game last night.
Yeah, I got your pliable rat ear. Yeah, it's a real sin that the Cowboys are so bad, and their defense is historically bad. How'd you like to be a Falcons fan right now, watching this team blunder all over the field in cities all across the United States, and realizing that if one of your players understood the rules of onside kick, kicks, you'd have had a victory over this bunch of idiots?
I couldn't watch the game and not think of you just chuckling at the screen every time they showed Jerry Jones up in the box there with Stephen Jones. And just, this team is a disaster, and it looked like, I hate to say anybody quits at that level because you know, these guys have some level of pride, but they looked awfully disinterested. How about that?
Yeah, I think they don't trust their coaches. I think they're looking at the coaching staff, and there have been reports to that extent so far coming out today that the players don't seem like they're being prepared, that they're being improved, that they're being helped in a way by this staff. And, you know, your starting quarterback's out. Your running back fumbles twice in the first half. He's supposed to be the guy you can rely on. And we've already proven that your defense is horrific. So this is a real disaster. But you know what? When you're in the NFC least, you can be 2-4 and stink like somebody's feet, and you can be in first place.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering about the reaction in Philadelphia. There's probably excitement today, isn't there? Because the Eagles are only a half game out.
No. Look, the Eagles finished the game the other day with two of their 11 regular starters in the game. Zach Ertz is now out for a few weeks. Their tight end, their starting running back, Miles Sanders, is going to be out for a couple weeks. Their offensive line is a shambles. Wentz took a horrific beating last week. So saying that you're excited about this team is the only thing that's exciting is you get to play the Giants twice in the next 3 weeks. And if you lose one of them, you might as well just start talking about draft choices.
I saw Mike Greenberg this morning of ESPN, and he had a proposal. I'm curious to see what you think of it, El Hombre. He said that if a team wins a division, that they shouldn't host a playoff game. We know that the Seahawks back in 2010, they were 7-9, and they hosted the 11-5 Saints, and that was the Beastquake game, so it was pretty cool. But it makes sense, doesn't it? Like, if the Cowboys win 6-10, the NFC East, should they host a playoff game?
Yeah, they won their division. Look, you know, what are we going to say? Okay, 6-10, they don't. 7-9, they don't. 8-8, they do. Well, maybe they don't if it's an ugly 8. No, if you win your division, you host the playoff game. That's the rule. That's the way it goes. And that goes for 16-0, and that goes for 2-14. That's just the way it is. And I'm not for setting up arbitrary rules about this stuff. You're either going to have the division winners host, or you're not going to have them host. But, you know, if you're not going to have them host, reseed everybody. But then you're going to say every year you're going to reseed everybody, which means an 11-5 team might end up second rather than fifth. So I say, and I'm not just saying this because the Eagles stink and they might get a home game, because anybody they play in the playoffs they're going to lose to. I'm just, and it's not like fans are going to be there, or many fans. So I just say you stick with what you're doing and you stop trying to make, okay, if you do this, if you do that, we'll do this. Too many ifs, ands, and buts.
Hey, what do you think of what we've seen offensively and defensively this year? Everybody talking about offenses going crazy, defenses all struggling, and we've certainly seen it here in Seattle. But people point to the penalties that are not being called, that somehow there's almost been a directive for officials to let some of the holding go that they'd otherwise call. I haven't truly noticed it as a fan watching these games. Have you?
Yeah, we spoke about this last week. I've seen holding calls.
I don't even remember asking
on,
you that.
Man. Wait, I'm remembering this? That's not good. If I'm remembering stuff like this, then you guys have issues.
Yeah.
No, and I'm not saying we should be not discussing it. It's historic in terms of points and yards, and it's clear that the league wants points and yards. That's what people come for. You know, it used to be a 10-7 game where everybody walked out of there with a bloody nose and a broken bone was what the NFL wanted to be. But now it's got to be 40-35. And most importantly, and you're seeing this a lot, they want the comebacks. As long as the defenses stink, you know, Indianapolis was down 21-0 to Cincinnati the other day, right? They come back. As long as the defenses stink, there's always chance for drama at the end of the game. That's what the league wants. More people tuning in, more people tuning in longer.
But have you been watching a game going, how did you miss that call? How did you miss that call?
Sure.
What I'm saying is I haven't noticed these obvious holding penalties that are just going uncalled left and right.
Watch the tackles as the guys go around. I mean, they've changed the rules of what you can do so much that, you know, you can say, well, that's not technically clinically holding. But they're getting their hands up in them, grabbing shoulder pads, hooking under arms. I think that that's part of it. But I also think that, you know, the game has basically changed to the point where the offenses are ahead of the defenses scheme-wise as well. They're spreading the field. Remember, teams are drafting cornerbacks now who played in these defenses that were overrun by air raid schemes, and they're not that great at coverage. You have to be able to play man-to-man coverage in the NFL, and there just aren't that many guys who can do it, because when there's five receivers, what are you going to do, play an underneath zone? You're going to get cooked downfield.
Michael, we got the World Series starting tomorrow night, Tampa Bay and the Dodgers coming off
tonight.
It's tonight. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me there.
No problem.
We've been promoting it all day, but that's all right.
Yeah, that's okay. Oh, yeah, my mind slipped a little bit there. Okay, so it's tonight. We're coming off 7-game series. I think I'm right about that, in the ALCS and the NLCS. Are you having the same enjoyment out of it this year, or has it been tempered a little bit with what's going on?
I don't usually enjoy baseball when the Phillies don't play. I'm just not that into it, but I am watching more games. I mean, that game's that deciding game between the Rays and the Yankees was outstanding. I loved it. And for those of you who read El Hombre back before the season with his gala MLB preview, you'll note that I had the Dodgers and Rays in the World Series with the Dodgers winning in six games.
Look at you.
So go on back and check your emails, and you'll be able to find that. But, you know, this has been exciting. There's been seven games of the series, and you always want that. I think playing seven games in 7 days is kind of crazy, the way they've done it, the way they did it throughout that. But, you know, you're seeing some great performances. You're seeing some young stars come up that we didn't expect. You're seeing some unlikely heroes. I think it's been a very good postseason. And, you know, I'm looking at it now as sort of saying, all right, this makes sense. We had teams in the postseason that belonged, and maybe some, there have been some shuffling if they played 162 games, but I don't think anybody's going to sit back and go, the Dodgers aren't the best team in the NL, and wouldn't have been if there were 162 games, and the Rays are a darn good baseball team.
And as you would say, how delicious was it to see the Astros go down?
Oh, that was great. I was scared there for a while.
Yeah, so I was.
I was afraid they were going to get back in.
I was right there with you.
I didn't want that, so it was delicious indeed. And I hope that it causes, you know, franchise-wise wringing of hands and lack of confidence, and then they go into some death spiral over the next several years, and they have to move the franchise to Charlotte or something.
Hey, the last thing I have for you, Michael, what do you think of Sid Hartman? Now, unfortunately, he died over the weekend, but he was working there at the Minneapolis Star Tribune as a sports writer, 74 years. He filed his last column last Thursday after talking to Adam Thielen. Incredible career this man had.
I love it, and he's my idol. I mean, working at age 100, filing columns, and being relevant. You know, this wasn't just somebody who's writing a once weekly thing for some local, you know, the Duluth Dispatch or something, or the International Falls Tribune. He was doing it. He was doing real work. He was talking to professional athletes. People were still reading his stuff. He was respected throughout. 74 years writing for a newspaper. That's astounding. You take your hat off and you say, you know, I'd love to be in that position.
Michael, great stuff. We'll do it again next week.
So long, suckers.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty solid. Swish.
I like the way he says drama.
Drama. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, you guys can follow Michael on Twitter at Daily Hombre. At Daily Hombre is where you're going to find Michael on Twitter. All right. Coming up, Keyshawn Johnson says, Jets, stick with the quarterback you got. Don't think about Trevor Lawrence. Ah, you don't need to do that. We'll let him explain when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelter, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
You know, a lot of players with this new coaching staff have been reluctant to get back to reporters. We haven't been in the locker rooms. We haven't really gotten a sense, is this team buying into this new coaching staff? And there has sort of been these insinuations, even by the coaching staff, that perhaps these players are improvising a bit. Let me tell you what I'm now hearing from some of the players this morning. You know, now that, of course, it's 2-4, discontent starts to leak out, Andrew. I'm told this coaching staff is totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. Another saying, they just aren't good at their job.
Ugh. Which is the bigger dumpster fire right now, the Cowboys or the Jets?
Jets.
Cowboys are really picking up some steam, though.
Well, the Cowboys are picking up steam, but the Jets have a huge lead.
It feels like it's worse for Dallas only because of the amount of money invested in their product. You know, the money they've handed out to Zeke Elliott, to Amari Cooper. I mean, the franchise tag on Dak, who's not playing right now. I mean, they've spent a lot of money to put this product on the field.
Some people thought they were preseason favorites in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl.
Man, and you've got people in the, I mean, it's, I feel like they're on equal footing, those two franchises. I know the Cowboys have a win or two, right? They have two wins?
They've got two.
Two. Well, that's twice as many as the Jets.
It's going to be funny watching the NFC East, see how that works out there. Because Philadelphia, they're 1-4-1, but the Cowboys are 2-4 and leading the division.
Terrible.
I thought Greenberg had a decent idea to at least be 8-8 to host a playoff game, but I think El Hombre is right about that. Probably they're going to keep it the way it is, but it's a hard one to make sense of if you're 6-10 and you're hosting an 11-5 team.
Yeah, everybody points to Beastquake, though. 7-9 Seahawks team, and that wouldn't have happened here in front of the home fans if a rule like that were in place. So.
No, it wouldn't have. But, boy, yeah, Dallas, and those are – they used to be respected coaches. Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator there. Mike McCarthy having success in Green Bay.
I don't know what's going on there, man.
And it just
– it is ugly.
Well, for all the world, it looked like they quit at times to me last night. It just – or either that or they were giving half-hearted effort. They weren't quitting entirely.
The reality is the Astros cheated in 2017 and cheated a little bit again in 2018 using just the decoder method, and it was wrong. The people who were involved that didn't leave naturally to go to other teams are all still employed by the Astros. In fact, one of the people who was intimately involved, I had demoted from a position in the clubhouse to a position somewhere else, and after I was fired, he was promoted back into the clubhouse. So none of those people faced any repercussions. They weren't discussed in the report, but the evidence is all there.
I think that cheated in 17 a little bit in 2008. We just cheated a little bit.
Yeah, we were big cheaters in 2017, but yeah, just yeah, we
dabbled in 18. That was former Astros GM Jeff Lunau, who says the Astros, who, as he said, cheated in 17 and just dabbled with it a bit in 18, and that many of the people involved are still employed with the team. That was by the way, courtesy of Houston TV station KPRC. As I like to say, Jim, they're all complicit. I just hate that the individuals that actually carried it out, right, that perpetrated it, the players, not one iota of damage done to them other than reputation, not a fine, not a forfeiture of games, not any sort of suspension,
yeah, well,
nothing.
Yeah, there should have been a suspension of players.
Well, that was so they were given immunity so that they would talk to the league about what was going on. But it seems like
you get the feeling that actually happened?
I don't know what happened. I think the commissioner screwed this up big time. The fact they get through this completely unscathed and somehow feel indignant about the whole thing, about, you know, sick of people talking about it. And I'm like, you really have no self-awareness at all.
Don't you think if you're this general manager, you'd be a lot better to do an interview and just say, you know what, we really screwed up. And I want to apologize to everyone from the bottom of my heart. And I don't know what got over me, but I just felt like we needed to find an edge and just go about it that way. And then people would be still like, well, you're a cheater, but at least you came clean with it.
Well, he's saying he didn't know. I read the longer article about it. Well, he was saying he had pages and pages of evidence of text messages and emails that were supposedly supporting his position that he was not in the know of this. And
Do you believe that?
He says he gave it over to the league. He felt like the league already had their mind made up, that he doesn't even know if they read it.
Hmm.
So I don't know. Only he knows what's true. I don't believe that he had no knowledge of it, no. Was he intimately involved? Was he saying, hey, let's do this? I have no idea, but I don't think he was 100% in the dark.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, they lucked out this year not having fans at the ballparks, but when fans come back next year, presumably.
They'll get it.
Yeah, I think this isn't one where time is going to heal all wounds. There's going to be a lot of heckling everywhere they go.
Good.
To make up for the lost season of
81 nights a year.
No one being there?
Yeah. Yeah, let them have it.
You have bigger holes than Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. Your team sucks. It's the worst thing going. So you drafted a guy 3 years ago because he was your Trevor Lawrence. He has nothing around him, nothing, zero, zilch, right? Nothing. He looks good at times and bad at times with nothing around him. A coach that how he'll wind up coaching the New York Jets, we'll never know, right? But you're ready to move on from him because you think Trevor Lawrence is the next Andrew Luck? The hell did Andrew Luck win? They act like Andrew Luck turned out to be Peyton Manning, mind you. But when Peyton Manning was the number one pick, the Indianapolis Colts, they had a guy named Marvin Harrison who turned out to be a Hall of Famer. Is there any Marvin Harrison on the New York Jets? They had a guy there at the time named Marshall Faulk. Then they drafted a dude named Edgerrin James. Is any of them dudes anywhere around New York?
That's Keyshawn Johnson going on about the idea that the Jets will draft Trevor Lawrence if they end up with the number one overall pick. And move on from Sam Darnold, and I think he makes some valid points that he's not surrounded by a bunch of talent, that he is not sitting there with a great coach. Who, I don't know how those guys still have their jobs, but I've never been a Sam Darnold guy. Even when he was at USC, he turned the ball over a lot, and that is held true in the NFL. And yeah, he's working with a situation that is not good in New York, but man, some of the decisions he makes, if you watched him over his brief time, 2.5 years now, or a little under 2.5 years, you wonder what he's looking at, because there are times where he'll throw passes when he's got protection in a clean pocket, and you're going, all right, that there's no excuse. Maybe the receiver ran the wrong route, maybe something happened there, but it's not about him getting creamed and he had no time, he's just throwing it, trying to make something happen. He's got a lot of blame in this as well. Not all him, not by a long shot, but yeah, he's a very big part of it. I'm not a huge believer in Sam Darnold. I think he's a mediocre quarterback.
I'm not a huge believer either. I like Sam Darnold, but I think he had such a good game against Penn State in the Rose Bowl that everybody goes, oh, man, Sam Darnold. And I remember a Friday night game against the Cougs over there in Pullman, and went over there with the kids, and, boy, his numbers through three quarters, really bad, USC losing that night. And you look at him and you go, well, all right, what do you go, like fifth or sixth overall or something like that? But he was, yeah, very highly regarded. I get a kick out of it. I felt differently about it. I feel differently about Keyshawn Johnson's comments than you do. I'm like going, oh, well, nice to hear that, you know, other guys can say stupid stuff on the radio too. You know, because, I mean, come on. Trevor Lawrence compared to Sam Darnold? Are you serious? It reminds me of, like, Arizona, where they took Josh Rosen, number 10 overall.
Yeah.
And then you can make a case like, boy, they really didn't give him a chance, but maybe he just didn't turn out to be the guy. And so when they went for Kyler Murray, turned out to be a good move. I think the same thing would be for the Jets. I mean, you get Trevor Lawrence. If I'm a Jets fan right now, I'm big into tanking. I'm just, go ahead, well, run the table at this point.
You've got no shot. So what's the value of winning two games this year? You might as well go 0-for.
Yeah,
and get that pick.
That's going to be really entertaining this year. The teams in the NFC East. Then you got Jacksonville. You got the Jets. It's going to be a free for all at the end of the season.
Who's battling for that number one spot? Who can stink the worst?
Especially when you think of the prize this year.
Yeah, and
that's a franchise changing player. There,
he looks like it. He looks like an absolute stud. As far as I do agree with Keyshawn, where he said, "Well, what did Andrew Luck ever win?"
Yeah, but come on. Andrew Luck was actually really good.
He was a good quarterback, but I thought he got a lot. He was overhyped, in my opinion.
I disagree on that. I really liked Andrew Luck.
He was good, but
he was hurt. He was hurt, Bob.
Availability is a skill, Jim.
Okay.
Those guys will tell you that.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. Coming up, we'll have a short version of what we learned before we turn everybody over to the first pitch of World Series game number one. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
We're learning things here in the studio as we speak, Maura. Jim often will have trouble turning his mic on. He'll start speaking, the mic's off, and we just realized he wasn't certain which pair of headphones to put on. He put on a set of headphones that had no sound coming out. Realized they were from another station.
Yeah, and earlier I almost got a black eye trying to put the right headphones on. I, you know, smacked my eye with it. Like, I mean, I've only been doing it for 10 years.
And then he tweeted from somebody else's Twitter account to try to get a guest earlier today, too. So it's been a landmark day for you.
But it was successful.
It was.
Confirmed a golf show guest on someone else's Twitter.
I just like that Jim walks up to a computer, sees the Twitter account that's open, and just starts tweeting from it.
Well, because usually Jim is logged into Twitter on every computer in there. So
yeah, that's what he calls being hacked.
I don't log out all the time.
Yeah. I like they said, well, I thought the page looked a little different. I don't know. I just sent the message.
I can't believe the guy responded. Mark Lai, he's going to be our guest on the golf show. He told me he's a great guest, too.
He's fantastic. Yeah, he's really, really good. All right. So outside of that, what else did we learn today, Maura?
We learned why Jim isn't a defensive coordinator.
Well, the way it is now, I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I don't like the slow death way of going about things. When you watch the Minnesota Vikings take, you know, 15 plays to go 90 yards or whatever, and you're out there for 8 minutes, your defense, and the chains keep moving, that's no fun watching that. I'd rather die aggressively, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather see somebody getting in there and trying to, you know, cause mayhem with the quarterback and at least giving your defensive backs a chance, but It's why I'm not a defensive coordinator.
Rather die aggressively. Well, want to go down swinging. Same thing, right?
Let's just say, you know, when I watch the Cougs, I'm just thinking, yeah, just yeah, be aggressive. And I know, and again, like Maura was saying there, I would not make a good defensive coordinator. So it's not like I sit here and think, man, Ken Norton's terrible. I could do a better job. I don't think that. I think someone else could do a better job. Yeah. But
would you just be blitzing every play?
I'd blitz more than the average defensive coordinator. Yeah, I don't like it when a quarterback sits back there and just kind of goes, let's see, go through my progressions. And a good defensive coordinator would tell me why that. You know, that wouldn't
that would
be good
a bad
too.
Idea.
Yeah, but it's just no fun to watch that.
The slow death.
That's what we watched against the Vikings.
Oh, I know. I watched them march down the field, just ding, 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 just chunk yardage. The ones that get me are when you feel like the defense has finally put them in a position to really capitalize. It's 3rd and 10, might be 3rd and 12, just 3rd and long situations. And I'd have to look up what their stats are, but it feels like every time they're in that situation, they give it up. Like the first down, second down, awesome. You guys finally stepped up. You got them in a 3rd and long situation. All right, now they're just going field position, hoping they can, you know, good spot to punt from. And they convert more often than not, it feels like.
They have, but they sure have gotten their share of big stops, though, for being a bad defense.
Yeah, at the key moment, they have. Let's hope it takes a little step up against the Cardinals. Just baby steps.
Hopefully, with Adams coming back.
Yeah.
Snacks
hopefully Adams is coming back. We don't know yet.
Yeah, Clayton talked about this 5-game stretch coming up. The run defense is going to have to dramatically improve.
Yep.
So Snacks Harrison could be a part of that.
What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned what El Hombre thinks about being pliable.
Usually it's at 5 o'clock, but during football season, we get bumped all around with this segment. But he's pliable. This man.
Pliable.
He is. He's very agreeable, this man. He is the one, the only El Hombre. Michael Bradley, how are you, man? Is that sounds like something I heard coming out of that Cowboys game last night.
Yeah, I got your pliable rat ear.
Not a fan of being referred to as pliable or flexible.
I don't think he likes the 4:30 slot.
He likes the room to breathe. He wants to be able to, you know, really dive into topics. He doesn't want to feel constrained by, you know, an 8 or 9 minute segment. He needs that 20 to really find his groove. Mm.
Well, once football season's over, we can go back to 5 o'clock with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he gets paid the same either way.
Yeah.
So he's doing less work right now.
That would be Jim's ideal if he was doing radio hits.
Yeah. To do a shorter segment.
Oh, do a shorter segment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Work less, make the same.
There's not a high demand around the country for. You know. Yeah, I think when they call our station, say,
guy?
"Yeah, hey, can we get a football expert to help us with this, you know, Seahawks upcoming opponent?"
You don't think your name's getting tossed?
There's
in
some
there.
Station I think in Milwaukee that calls me every year whenever the Seahawks play the Packers, but that's the only one I hear from.
Yeah,
don't you think the rest of the country's missing out?
I in a big way, certainly. A lot of gold, a lot of gold going uncovered right there. What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned how the Astros scale of cheating works.
I think that cheated in 17 a little bit in 2008. We just cheated a little bit.
Yeah, we were big cheaters in 2017, but yeah, just yeah, we
dabbled in 18.
Yeah, that was funny. The Astros GM.
What kind of an excuse is that? We cheated in 17. We a little bit in 18. What does that mean? Your conscience got to you? What happened?
So if you're Rob Manfred, do you sit there and go, yeah, you guys were really bad in 2017. But yeah, there was improvement on the cheating scale here. You went from a lot to a little bit.
What does that even mean? Do you take that seriously? We did not as much in 18. I think you're either doing it or you're not doing it. Right?
Unless it bothers me more than the trash cans. I mean, the buzzer. Having the buzzer.
Do we know that that's a fact, that that was actually in play? I know everybody's just, you know, you got the pictures
Altuve
of Altuve
running into the dugout. And seems fishy. And they don't
I
have
think
it.
Everyone believes it, but I don't think we know for sure.
Yeah, I feel like that's taken on a life of its own, that was never actually uncovered, that was going on. But everybody points to the wrinkle in his jersey and him saying, don't tear my jersey off or whatever. Maybe it was. I'm certainly not defending them. I'm just saying, did we ever get factual proof that they did have a, some sort of buzzer system going.
No, you're probably right, but I just like to think that they were, you know, doing everything.
They all had a buzzer.
Whatever they
to
could
them.
Do.
Buzz once for fastball, two for
breaking ball. Look at the season Altuve had this year.
Yeah.
When he didn't know the pitch was coming in.
God, it was so fun watching him just chuck the ball all over the place.
Yeah.
Not to the first baseman. It was fun.
Baseball gods exist, Bob.
Sort of. Yeah, they should have, you know, let Correa and Bregman have a dose of humility, too. But anyway, what else did we learn, Maura?
We learned Jim's thoughts on Keyshawn Johnson's take on Sam Darnold.
I feel differently about Keyshawn Johnson's comments than you do. I'm like going, oh, well, nice to hear that, you know, other guys can say stupid stuff on the radio, too.
Well, felt like what he was saying was stupid.
That's in reference to saying that they shouldn't go after Trevor Lawrence if they have the opportunity to with the number one pick overall, because the Jets have other problems that they need to address, and that Sam Darnold is okay as the quarterback.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I disagree with him, them being okay with him. They do. He's right that they do have other problems. He's absolutely right. They've got a lot of other problems, starting with the guys running the team.
No, but that's the same every year, isn't it, with whoever gets the number one pick?
Yeah, you got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
That's how you get the number one pick.
Okay, Keyshawn, thanks for that insight.
Did we learn anything else, Maura?
No, that's all the learning, unless you guys are doing more in studio.
No, I think we learned everything we can today. We've got baseball coming up. I want to thank our guests today, John Clayton and Michael Bradley. If you missed any of today's show, you can head to the podcast page at 710sports.com, click the podcast button. Then just scroll down to our picture and click on that. And everything you miss each and every day is waiting for you right there. We're going to send you to Game 1 of the World Series between the Rays and the Dodgers. That's coming up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.